no risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root, and tonight's show, recording not on a Tuesday night, but a Wednesday night. We are a week away from the start of NFL free agency, and so this is our free agency preview. Seth Cox is on the line. We're going to talk about the Arizona Cardinals and free agency. There's a couple of new things that's kind of going on with regards to free agency, a potential change on the offensive line that, you know, maybe we were expecting, maybe we weren't, but, you know, thanks for listening, and head on over to RevengeOfTheBirds.com. This is our podcast, Revenge of the Birds Radio. I believe this is show 110. Yeah, we've done that many shows over the last 3 years. And yeah, Seth Cox on the line. We'll bring him on as soon as he wants to unmute himself. We'll bring him on. How you doing tonight, Seth? How's everything going?
Good, Jess. How are you?
Doing great. Life is a busy time for us all, outside of the podcast and outside of the football stuff. Seth Cox, one of the kind of my go-to guy for draft content and for film breakdown, all sorts of things on Revenge of the Birds, and also one of the hosts for the Draft Breakdown, NFL Draft Breakdown podcast, which, by the way, is, you know, if you're into draft podcasts and you don't necessarily want to listen to, you know, Mel Kiper talk about the draft all the time, between Seth and Justice and Justin, the guys that he has on the show, you get some really good insight, and had a great show. Where can they find that podcast, Seth? I get it through SoundCloud.
Yeah, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and iTunes. Just go to the Draft Breakdown podcast. Apparently, we're pretty easy to find if you search us in iTunes. I don't have an iPhone. I'm not special. So, but yeah, SoundCloud's great. Actually, that's what I've been using for all my podcast listens now, because you can stream it once and then you have it whenever you want to listen to it. So it's really easy. And then on Stitcher Radio. But yeah, I mean, it's been a lot of fun. And last night's episode was a lot of fun because the combine sucked. Like, these prospects this year are just not athletic whatsoever. I mean, they're athletic relative to, like, Jess and I, but to NFL standards, they're just not. I mean, there's not the athletes that we were expecting. So it was a lot of fun to talk about last night. I am very much in tune with, like, Cardinals and prospects that fit what the Cardinals are looking for. Justice and Justin are more in tune for the entire NFL draft. And so they have a broader scope, and so they bring a unique voice, each of them, because none of us agree on really anything. So it makes it a lot more enjoyable than one person talking about one prospect, and that's the only take you get. You really do get three different views. When I have seen a guy play, actually, but you get three different views on a prospect, and a lot of times they're differing, and it makes it, you know, a little more enjoyable than most draft podcasts that you listen to.
And the episode, I listened to the episode, it was, you know, I listened to the last show, it was fantastic. I'm going to plug the last episode I did last week was without Seth, and as much as I enjoy talking to Seth every week, this was a treat because it was one of the Arizona Cardinals' new players brought on with the future for a future contract for 2016, Valerian Umeizioki, former Falcon, spent the year on the practice squad with the Falcons. He reached out to me on Twitter, found me to, you know, trying to get his name out there a little bit, get to know the Cardinals community a bit, and he was willing to come on the show. So if you haven't yet, make sure you listen to that. You get an insight to a really great kid. I don't know what he has in store for him in terms of future with the Cardinals, but at a position where there is definitely some potential change, This is a kid that you'll want to watch, want to pay attention to. Great kid. I was impressed with what I heard from him.
Well, and anytime you get a story like his, it's super entertaining to listen to. I was able to listen to it while I traveled. So it's one of those things, like you said, the story is so much more than the actual player. And that's not a shot at him at all, but like the story and the work, fun to see the insight, like to have the access to what these guys have to go through that are, you know, there's only, I can't remember what it is. There's like what's, you know, 500 or 600 roster spots. So these guys that are, you know, the bottom 100 guys in the NFL, they're just fighting. Like they're just scrapping and trying to hang on to their dream. And it's just such a fun, like, human interest story, and listening to something, you know, something different, and it really humanizes these guys in general.
And it was really the first time I'd ever been able to kind of sit down and talk to anyone, especially he's only spent training camp. I forgot he spent training camp with the Falcons after being undrafted and then got cut and didn't get picked up anywhere. So he spent an entire year of football, like out of football. So he went through college, graduated from college, went through the draft, didn't get drafted, thought he was going to get drafted. You know, signs on with the Falcons, goes through training camp, gets cut, and then doesn't get picked up. And so, and that was fun because I never talked to anyone about, I'd never asked anyone, what is that like? And, you know, it's one of those things where they're always waiting, but they're waiting for that call, but they just keep going. And luckily, he's young. He's a young kid. So, you know, it's much easier to continue with your dream when you're still fairly young without any sort of commitments outside of, hey, just get in that gym, keep working out. But you know, I loved that episode. I'd like to do more like that. So hopefully throughout the offseason, I can get a hold of some of these players. This won't be a podcast episode, but it seems I get the yearly phone call, the yearly contact from one of the companies that Larry Fitzgerald endorses. And I will get about 10-15 minutes this weekend to talk to Larry Fitzgerald. I'll ask him a few questions. I normally in years past, I put that on the podcast, in my moving scenario, it says, you know, I'm changing houses. I won't have internet that morning. So I will just record my phone call and transcribe it and talk about that way. So I bet I talk to Larry. I'll get to ask him, for example, the thoughts of, you know, kind of what Bruce Arians talked about the last time he talked about Fitz is, you know, the heart's there, but the body might not, you know, how hard it is to train, keep himself, you know, he keeps himself at about 210, 212 when his natural body state is about 225. That's what he came into the league in. Interesting kind of what he sees beyond this year, what he sees for the team this year. And Fitz is always a great talk. You know, he doesn't give you too much insight other than, you know, great media, you know, talent sound bites, but it's always a treat to talk to him.
Yeah, I look forward to anytime you get to talk to Fitz. It's enjoyable.
So let's go ahead and get started. What we kind of have planned for the show tonight. Now, there's a couple things that we want to go over before we actually preview free agency, and we will get to that. So we're going to talk about who are the Cardinals players, the free agents they need to re-sign. What are the positions we think they're going to target, and who are some potential candidates for guys that the Cardinals could sign. Arizona's got roughly $20 million under the cap right now, with the potential to free up a little more depending on things they do. You've got Corey Redding as a potential cap hit. You've got a couple other places you can trim some money. But first, there was kind of a flurry of Cardinals news that came in today, and we're just a week away from free agency. Next Monday, we will be able to start with the rumors without actually happening because we got the tampering period for a couple of days. And then next week, we start for real free agency, and I, for one, am glad that I am off the work for, as I tend to always be every year for free agency. It kind of goes in line with my week or two off, and I can just sit and, you know, follow Twitter and write. But we've got some new Cardinals information, and one is the how you want to look at it is it was reported on Wednesday that Jonathan Cooper looks like he's going to be moving positions again, that the Cardinals are looking at him to play center and to have him see perhaps if he can take over at center for Lyle Sendlein. Very interesting movement on that. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Drew Stanton makes some comments at some read through, you know, reading to kids type thing, talking about the potential of his leaving or his returning. And that and Tony Jefferson. Tony Jefferson, safety, undrafted with the Cardinals a couple years ago. He's a restricted free agent. The Cardinals tendered him, but the lowest tender offer, meaning all they do at almost $1.7 million, they have the right to match any contract offer that he gets, but they are choosing not to get any compensation for him. So it's the lowest tender possible as an undrafted rookie. As an undrafted free agent, he came into the league. There will be no compensation there. So we'll talk about the ramifications of that, some insight that Seth has gotten from someone in the know. And then we'll talk about the free agencies. But let's first talk about this Cooper thing. And, moving Cooper to center only a year after they moved him to right guard. What does this have to say about Cooper's future with the Cardinals? Does this tell me that, goodness, are they just trying to find something for him?
Yeah, I think that's really it. Which is interesting because, you know, you and I have talked, we've talked about it on the show, and we've heard before, that it might be, you know, a mental thing for Coop. And so this kind of flies in the face of that.
Right.
Because, like, you don't want a guy that can't make line calls. But I think it's a desperation heave at this point. And not like a bad thing. It's a desperation heave to try and find a way to get your 2013 first round pick not just on the field but involved and engaged and having an impact. It's a move. I guess we can say that. Like,
well, dude, the interesting thing about it is when he was drafted, there was chatter from Cardinals fans anywhere, and I don't think it came from, you know, reliable sources other than just people speculating, that because of the type of intelligent player he was coming out of North Carolina, he was viewed as a very athletic and very intelligent player, that perhaps his future would be at center. That there was that, you know, that discussion flying around. But anyone that I talked to and that I'd read, he did play, I think, a game at center while he was in college, and it was dreadful. So they saw, you know, Alan Faneca in him. And then, you know, just 2 years later, they bring in Mike Iupati to play his position, moving to right guard, only to see him lose his job to Ted Larson. And now, and I think this move had means a couple of things. One, it's, come on, we got to find some way to keep Cooper from, you know, arriving there on Bust Island. And two, it also kind of tells you about AQ Shipley as well.
It does, and it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, because the talk coming out, I went back and looked. I looked at my scouting report, and then I looked at every scouting report I could find that was from a semi-credible source or somebody I respect. So, you know, I found a lot of bad scouting reports, but then, you know, I went through all the credible ones and the guys that I know that maybe weren't credible at the time, but I knew them and now they are credible. And one person mentioned Cooper as a potential center down the line, and that was Eric Stoner. He was with Bleacher Report at the time. He doesn't really do a ton of draft stuff anymore, but when he does, it's usually very in-depth and very intelligent. He does a lot of stuff with Matt Waldman of Matt Waldman's RSP or something of that nature. Anyways, he was the one that mentioned it. He was the one that said, I could see Cooper playing center because of his athleticism and the fact that he is a little undersized for guard. Like, he is, you know, I think they list him at 6'4", right? And he's more like 6'2". So it's an interesting move. Jess and I can tell you this. He played center one time. Once in college. It did not go well. And he was...
And in fairness, because it was only once.
And then he was moved back to guard forever. Like, ever. He snapped a little bit at the Senior Bowl, if I remember right. I know he snapped somewhere, and I can't find if he was at the Senior Bowl, but I'm pretty sure he was, so I'm just going to say it. And then, if I'm wrong, somebody correct me. But he snapped with the centers at the Senior Bowl, and, yeah, I mean, I guess.
And he's gotten some snap. They have given him some snaps with the Cardinals in training camp, but nothing more than warm-ups. Never once did I see him in practice, even with the third team, actually taking snaps. It was always a case when you're warming up the quarterbacks is you give those guys a few reps so that if worse comes to worst, then you can have a guy who's actually, you know, had a guy's hands under center, under his butt once or twice.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's one of those things that's, I think it's a desperation heave. And like I said, I'm not saying that as a bad thing. I'm just saying this is like, this is it. Like,
it's the reality. It is.
You can't have a guy playing his third position in 3 years and not just realize that this is a desperation move. They're trying to see if the light bulb clicks. And if it doesn't, I mean, they're going to move on. This is year four. They don't have to, you know, pick up his option. They'll pick up his option because they can cut him before the calendar year. Is that how it works?
They can cut him I think they can cut him at any time before final cuts, honestly.
Okay, without the salary cap, right?
Right. I think that it's guaranteed, but I don't think it's guaranteed. It's in the sense that I think it's just week one, I think. I had to look that up.
And here's a crazy thought. What if this center move is done with that in mind? Because... he'll get top five, I think, was what it was, right? He gets the average of the top five. The top, let's see, top five guards
number seven
are going to be like $9 million. Dollars. Top five centers,
you know,
going to be like seven. I mean,
that's an interesting thought. I mean, obviously, but what more than anything is we're going to talk about this is. What that means, if they're looking to move him to center potentially, that means they're looking for a guard because they don't have another guy that they think, unless they really think that old Watford is going to step in and be that guy, you're going to see them pick up a veteran in free agency. And there's been a couple of names that Mike Jarecki mentioned way back when, and one of them that's come up a couple other times. We can talk about that in a little bit, but this just says, my goodness, it's turning into, and I wrote about this in 2013 before the draft or right after the draft, since, you know, that was the talk of offensive line. The Cardinals just simply have never had a first round offensive lineman work. Never. I mean, I threw Joel Wolf at you because Joel Wolf was a first rounder, late first rounder, way back in what, like 1990. He was nothing more than basically a career backup. And he did last three coaching changes in Arizona with the Cardinals, so that's worth something. But there has not been a single first-round offensive line that turned out to be anything close to what they were hoped to be.
And I was wrong. The money's going to be about the same. Actually, it might be a little more for center now that I look at it, because I forgot how much they paid Rodney Hudson to go to Oakland. And
now Alex Mack's going to get paid too. So.
Yeah, and he's off the book right now. So, because I forgot that that happened because salaries are so weird. So it's the average – it's their average salary. It's not like all the escalators and all that stuff. It's like the average salary. So it'll be about $7.8 million if he's at guard. And it'll be about $8 million if he's at center. So it's negligible. So yeah, scratch that. But anyways, yeah, it's just interesting because like you said, this is a guy that it's kind of a last ditch effort, kind of a last hope. Like let's hope this works. Cause he needs it. Cause they need more than they need him as a first round pick to turn out. They need a center that will hold down the fort for the foreseeable future and kind of be a rock on that offensive line.
And yes, you know, the center position has kind of been in flux. You had Lyle Sinline barely holding on a couple of years ago. They bring in A.Q. Shipley, and basically it's Shipley and Ted Larson running the... And obviously, Bruce Arians was not happy because they brought back Lyle off the streets and basically kicked... And it looked like Ted Larson was done. And both of us talked about it, how it looked like Larson was done. And all year, B.A. talked about how even it is between Shipley and Sinline, but you hear what he's saying and you see how the actions, and what is this telling you? They see Shipley as nothing more as nice depth, perhaps, and it's one of those odd situations with him it showed up in Indianapolis. You know, he was a center, he graded out well, and then they were looking for someone else. They benched him for some rookie, and so he, a case of a guy who knows the offense in and out. And, you know, maybe it's just there's something about Shipley who just doesn't quite, when he gets on the field, the coach is like, eh, I don't know. Because if they're taking a failed right guard, failed left guard, failed right guard, borderline bust of a first rounder and toss him there at center where he's had one start in his football career and it was awful, that doesn't just say something about Cooper's desperation. That says something about the confidence they have in Shipley is to be a legitimate candidate.
Absolutely, and it's, you know, it's an indictment all around of everybody, and it's a situation where, you know, you just have to hope that it works out and that this can be the, you know, the final move of his career, and maybe, you know, maybe they can get him, you know, cheap. You know, you hate to look at this in that light, but maybe his failure at two positions and having a good year at center in 16, maybe they can get him for 5 years and $25 million as opposed to 5 years and $45 million, what, you know, guys that are good offensive linemen get. So, you know, you hate to look at it like that, but maybe that, you know, will work itself out for the Cardinals where they have a guy that works out that they drafted. Maybe it took some time, but in the end, it ended up being, you know, a good thing for everybody.
Well, more than anything, he's a kid that needs something good to happen. You know, we saw him running around. He looked good moving around, just didn't look good blocking anyone, and apparently there were the mental issues. But that's the thing. If he's having a hard time with his assignments, how in the world is he going to make line calls to give assignments to everyone else? That's the thing that's mind-boggling about this whole thing is it's always seemed that, you know, the reason what they went back to Larson is because Arians and the protection schemes you get. That's why Paul Fonseca was playing, and that's why Ted Larson. They knew the calls, they knew the assignments. They just were getting beat physically, and they could live with that as long as you're not, you know, just completely letting a free runner at your quarterback.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I hope it works out. I hope it's the right move.
Well, let's talk about Drew Stanton, an interesting case. And, you know, it's really kind of an interesting conversation. If you head on over into the birds, I wrote about, I've actually got one position group I've yet to, actually two. I've got the cornerback, I've got the defensive backs, and I've got the specialists. But when I talked about the corner, when I wrote about the cornerbacks and the situation moving forward, is they got Carson Palmer locked up for a couple more years. They've got Mac Barkley. And then they've got Drew Stanton, who is an unrestricted free agent, who makes the comment today, you know, he's trying to surround himself with good organizations, and he thinks the Cardinals is one of them. He's had the wool pulled over his eyes before. You know, it's really pretty much every single place he's gone has not worked out in terms of becoming a starter. The Lions drafted Matt Stafford. He goes to the Jets, and then, you know, they trade for Tim. They go and get Tim Tebow. He goes to the Colts, and they get Andrew Luck. And they get it comes to the Cardinals, and it looks like he might be the starter. You know, he's the first free agent that Bruce Arians picks up. And what do? They trade for Carson Palmer. Now Stanton has proved himself to be more than a capable backup, but now he says, you know, he wants to stay, but if he has to leave, he will. And that, you know, there is nothing that is absolute the way he should do it, because this is a mercenary league. You go where the money is, because as soon as you might not produce, this league kicks you to the curb without any sort of remorse. So, you know, but the thing is, do we go into this Super Bowl window type season with no veteran backup? Do you roll with a rookie? Do you roll with Matt Barkley? Because the backup, the, you know, the free agent backup quarterback market is really bone dry, especially with guys that are even at all familiar with who could run the offense.
You know, the more I've thought about it, the more I saw the Barkley trade as like super insurance. I don't even know how to explain it. Like catastrophe insurance, basically.
That's all it was. That's all it was.
I don't think it was ever like, oh, he's our quarterback of the future. I think it was, if it happens again.
That's hilarious, by the way. Hilarious that people thought that.
I looked at it as, if it happens again, we have a guy that's competent enough mentally to run the offense, and I don't have to worry about anything else. So that was my thought.
And not on top of that, because they had a guy in that. Ryan Lindley knew the offense. He knew how to make the calls. He just couldn't put the ball where he was supposed to. He couldn't do that. And so there is a higher upside for Barkley that, you know, if worse comes to worst, if the absolute worst thing happens where you both get Palmer and Stanton down, they went and tried Ryan Lindley. That didn't work. BA gave up on Logan Thomas really quick. Matt Barkley, okay, at least he's been with the team all year and has a higher upside than Ryan Lindley, I guess, probably has. But so, I've never thought, and I actually, I talked to a couple guys, more media guys, about the thoughts, because I thought, you know, well, did Barkley perhaps show enough that he could be the backup? And another like, no, not probably not. He was just a guy, just in case. The worst thing, you know, after 2013, you know, after 2014, that is, you know, you wanted to have a guy who had been in the locker room all year, who'd been at practice all year, and not someone who'd been gone for half the year to pick things up and to be able to do things. And by all means, because of the fact the Cardinals are talking to Drew Stanton, have initiated contracts, you know, talks, and have made it very evident that they would like to have him back, that tells you Matt Barkley was never in the conversation to be the backup.
Right, and because if he was, they'd just be like, all right, talk to you later. Like, have a good one. Good luck.
So the question comes to this. Do you re-sign Drew Stanton, and how much are you willing to pay? Because when a guy like Chad Henne gets 2 years, $8 million, who has, what, I think the stat is he's 5-17 into the starter, and you've got Drew Stanton, who, you know, kind of held the waters for a while, 5-3 as a starter. You know he's looking for at least $4 million. I've put out there, you know, if it were me, now looking at the money situation, but because they want to have a guy, and it's not necessarily the case where if Palmer goes down for the year and you have to rely on him, because obviously Stanton, you know, he has a little bit of upside, but who do you trust? Do you trust Drew Stanton in there if Palmer goes down for a week or two or three or four? Or do you trust Matt Barkley? Or do you trust some quarterback the Cardinals pick up in the draft or an undrafted guy? And you see what the Cowboys went through, who were just absolutely inept after Tony Romo went down. And then you go, yeah, Drew Stanton's not even... This is why Derek Anderson is a backup still. He's a capable quarterback, a veteran guy who knows how to play football. And I think it's going to take 3 years, $14 million. I think that's what it's going to take, and I think he's worth every penny because he takes you through the 2 years that you got Palmer, and then you give him an extra year. Maybe you cut him after that, but if you want him to be a bridge to a new quarterback, or you let him compete then at that age, you can do that. But I've said it's going to take 3 years, $14 million. I think that ultimately the Cardinals are going to have to go that route.
Can they just draft a quarterback and move on? No, I mean, yeah, if they're going to sign him, that's what it's going to cost, and it's unfortunate because all of a sudden you're eating up $5 million of cap space. You know, that's too bad. go play somewhere else, Stanton. Get paid. Go get your money. That's all I got. Because I don't know. I don't want the money to be spent on him. I understand all of that. I understand the financial or the aspect of it. But let's be honest. Like, they're an 8-8 team. 8-8-ish with Drew Stanton at quarterback. just be done with it. That's my thought. So, I don't know.
The other thing that we look at, and we're going to talk before we actually hit the full free agency, and that's Tony Jefferson. Tony Jefferson, who came on as an undrafted rookie, kind of came into his own, became a starter, was at one point at the beginning of last season, starting at the beginning of 2014, starting for Tyrann Mathieu, who had yet to come back, was a leading tackler in the NFL. Very able player, made some good plays, been fairly consistent as well. He's a restricted free agent, and the Cardinals made the decision to offer him a restricted free agent tender. However, unexpectedly, as most people around the team thought that probably they would offer him a second round tender, which would pay him around $2.5 million, and should some team decide to knock his socks off with an offer, that they could get draft compensation. Instead, they go with just the lowest tender offer, which is, original draft round. In his case, he was undrafted, so it's simply right of first refusal, where they get to match any offer that any team gives him. But if they decide to not match it, they get no compensation. An interesting move. And Seth, you have a little bit of insight as to you kind of saw this coming. Then you believe, based on what you've heard, and surprisingly so, that Tony Jefferson really isn't in the future of the Cardinals, isn't in the plans of the Cardinals' future.
Yeah, so I got a text. I have a couple people I talked to about the Cardinals, and I sent you the text conversation, and basically said, you thinking TJ moves on from Arizona? And the response was, yeah, I do. Restricted free agent, and they don't value him. And I think that kind of coincides with what we just saw, right? Like, if you value him, you give him $2.5 million, and you get a second round pick if somebody takes him from you.
Yeah,
you have right of first refusal. So maybe you're hoping that he gets $2 million a year. Maybe you're hoping he gets like a 3-year, $6 million deal. And so you can come back and say, oh, we'll give you 3 years, $7 million or whatever. But it's such an odd time. You and I talked about this before. It's such an odd time to start pinching pennies of, $600,000 or $900,000, whatever the difference was. It's just such an odd time for that.
And maybe they were looking, because if you want to look at Rashad Johnson, when he was an unrestricted free agent, when he re-signed with the team in 2013, he signed, I think it was a 3-year, $4.5 million, maybe a $5 million deal. And maybe that's the kind of route they want to go with Jefferson. I found some comments, and we talked about this before the show, when Bruce Arians talked about the team needs, one of the things he made sure to say is that he wanted to add length and speed to both cornerback and safety, which was really interesting considering, well, one, they've got Tyrann Mathieu, who does not have length and doesn't necessarily, if you talk about, pure speed, doesn't have that. He definitely moves around. Then you got Dalen Buchanan, who doesn't play safety anymore and won't be playing safety anytime soon. And then you're left with two free agents in Rashad Johnson and Tony Jefferson, neither one of which you would qualify them as being long or speedy in the secondary. Both of them are capable. Both are pretty average. I think they're both 5'11". But you could almost tell, look, just by those comments, it's kind of foreshadowing the fact that they plan on turning over that secondary, which is really odd to do considering the secondary was supposedly the absolute strength of their defense.
Yeah, it's like, because you and I talked about it before the show, they could have three new starters on on in the secondary next year. Like, I raise your hand if you saw that coming. Like, honestly, like, maybe, you know, maybe they upgraded at corner, you know, and they try to do a sweetheart deal with Rashad to get him back for a couple more years. And, you know, they tendered Tony as a second round. Like, this could be legitimately Patrick Peterson and whatever Tyrann Mathieu is at the start of 2016. And that's kind of an odd decision.
Yeah.
Like, that we've talked about this, or I've talked about this before on Twitter. The Cardinals are absolutely mimicking the Seahawks line of thinking of, we can give the get the secondary primed and ready, and let's invest in that. And the front seven is semi-replaceable, like moving parts. Our scheme is good enough to cover all that up. But we have to have the talent in the back end. We have to have the ability to shut teams down in the back end. So that's what I kind of feel like they're doing. Like, it's not that they're cheap, but they're thinking, you know, all right, we were good in the secondary. We weren't great. We need to be great.
And that's going to cost. I mean, as it is, they're paying Patrick Peterson a buttload of money. They are going to be paying Tyrann Mathieu a boatload of money. They paid Justin Bethel good money, like starters money, and has played down the stretch, has people, and now granted, that's more fans, so it'll be interesting to see how the coaching staff, you know, treats this. He's being paid starters money. He's getting paid more than he's getting. I'll give you perspective. When the Cardinals let Greg Toler go 3 seasons ago, that's what he got, 3 years, $15 million. And they brought Jerrod Powers in to be the starter at 3 years and $10.5 million. Now Bethel's getting 3 years, $15 million, which tells you they intend on him being a defensive contributor, not just a special teams guy, but to play cornerback. So you're already paying him, you're already paying Pat, you're already paying, going to be paying Ty. How much money are they going to dump into that secondary? Maybe that's, you know, you speculated before the show. Does this mean if they're going to let Rashad go, and if they're going to go with the cheap route on Jefferson, does that mean they're going to bring in a safety? I don't know. I think it's more likely that they probably they have a better feel of what Jefferson's value is, and they think that that's what he's worth, and they'll keep him around for another year, let him prove, you know, kind of the, you know, how Keim goes with the free agents, let Jefferson prove it in 2016 and go get a big deal. Maybe they bring back Rashad. They're probably drafting a safety, but what's your kind of your take? If is your thought, you threw out a name out there that perhaps they'd be going after.
Right. I said, maybe they're going to look at, if they're going to go big, like George Aloka, the guy from Cincinnati, is going to get probably $8 to $9 million a year. That's a Keim move. We've seen with, you know, Jared Valdir, and then we saw it with Mike Iupati, one big free agent splash, one. And so maybe that's what they're, you know, looking at doing. And so I don't know. I mean, honestly, it just doesn't make sense unless they've got a, like, clear idea of what they can do in free agency. And my question is, and I don't know all of it, what's the time frame they have to match a restricted free agent offer for Jefferson? So, like, if Aloka is like day 4 or 5, like Iupati was, or maybe he was day 3, but if Iloka's, you know, in the first week that they're trying to get him signed and it doesn't work out, how much time do they have you know, to match TJ. I didn't know that. I should have looked that up. I didn't know if you knew off the top of your head.
I think it's a week, but let me check. And
the other name I brought up while you're looking
five
that
days.
Up to inform
five
everybody.
Days.
5 days, okay. The other name I brought up that's interesting is maybe Eric Weddle can still play on the back end. Aloka would be your strong safety. Weddle's going to be a free safety. But maybe they see Eric Weddle out there and they say, he's our vet free agent that has made, you know, $60 million, and we can get him for 2 years at, you know, $15 million, as opposed to paying George Aloka $40 million over 5 years. And so maybe, and I don't have, in terms of insight of what their plan is, I don't know that. But the text I got said he's just, Tony Jefferson is not necessarily their first choice plan type of maneuver.
And he's the guy like, okay, we can live with that. And that's all right. I think that's probably all right. And at the same time, $1.6 million, $1.7 million, you know, while that is on the low end of things, that's still three times what he was making a season ago. That's essentially he will make this season on that is equal to what he made his first 3 years in the league. Not bad, honestly, not bad at all.
And oh, and by the way, we didn't mention this. You could tell he was not happy on Twitter about it.
Oh, I actually hadn't seen that. So at least something to note.
his response was simply the cool emoji, like that's, or the okay emoji. I think that's what it was. I'm looking it up right now, but yeah, it was like not exactly like, all right, I've got to prove this. Yeah, it was the okay emoji, like okay, whatever.
Well, I mean, as a restricted free agent, you can't expect much more. And I pointed something out to you before the show is this, and maybe this is kind of, you know, a Steve Kahn way of doing things. Since taking over in 2013, the only other restricted free agent the Cardinals have tendered is Ryan Hoyer. And they really had no intention on keeping him. He was considered, and they second round tendered him. And that mean what that did was the ultimate insurance policy. And I think that's what this case will be, is that Tony Jefferson will be an insurance policy on the back end of the secondary, a guy that they know can play well, but if they can get an upgrade, they will definitely do so.
And I'm kind of with you right there. I think that's their entire plan of action for this.
So let's move on to actual free agency. If you're just jumping in on the show, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio of Seth Cox on the line, one of my writers on RevengeOfTheBirds.com, draft expert, film breakdown guy, as well as a guy with more contacts out within the league part than I do, and I'm jealous of that. He also hosts the draft breakdown podcast, a great show, and we run RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site. Cardinals content up the wazoo every day, all that sort of stuff. And we're talking free agency. We're a week away from the start of free agency. So let's talk about a little bit about the Cardinals. Who are the free agents that they need to bring back? They have some key players, especially on the back end. You've got Rashad Johnson. You've got Jerrod Powers hitting free agency. Sean Weatherspoon on defense. You've got Josh Morrow, a restricted free agent. Interestingly enough, there is no word that he's been offered a tender. A restricted free agent tender. You have as well, I mean, if you're looking at, you know, Dwight Freeney's a free agent. Lamar Woodley, who ended the season on injured reserve, is a free agent as well. Who are the guys on defense, if any, that the Cardinals should bring back?
Yeah, none. I mean, I'm okay if they bring back like a Morrow. I just had it right here, and now I just lost it.
And I think Morrow will be back. That's been the term restricted free agents. He's a guy who I think will have the opportunity to make an impact this next year. He's improved a little bit every year, And, you know, he's kind of like the poor man Matt Shaughnessy, a little bit more versatile than Matt Shaughnessy. And interesting, in real limited time, he was, I think, fourth on the team with 10 quarterback pressures. And he played real limited. He had a specific role in on their dime defense, and he got some pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a bad player, and he's fine if you get him cheap. You don't want to spend any money on him, and that you need those players on your team. Like, he's a roster filler, and that's okay. Like, that's not a bad thing. So
Jerod Powers and Rashad Johnson are interesting players there. Both have been kind of the most important field leaders. Obviously, Patrick Peterson is the performer out there. Tyrann Mathieu is the heart and soul of that defense. But the brains have been Jerod Powers and Rashad Johnson. To lose both of them will be an interesting thing, and it looks like it'll probably go that route because I think they want taller, faster guys, taller, more athletic guys back there than what they've got. Rashad's turning 30, or is 30, and Jerod Powers, he's now in, I think, what, got 7 years in the league now. He's entering year 8. It's about the time, if he's not one of the elite guys, you want to go ahead and say, have yourself a lovely career, and we're going to get someone younger and faster than you.
Yeah, and that's where you're just at with him. I mean, I really don't see a ton of, like, they got to keep this guy. I'd like to keep Rashad, but he's 30. He probably wants to get paid.
And he deserves it. He deserves that because he's been woefully underpaid for the production he's had the couple of years. So, Rashad, go get paid somewhere. I'm okay with that.
Right. Just not in Arizona. I mean, like, I'm cool with that. I wouldn't mind Swearinger. I mean, he's not good, but again, he's a body. I'm just looking at these names. I mean, outside of Tony, I really, like, there's nobody that jumps out that, like, I'm surprised that they're not making more of a push on.
But you don't think that, you know, Roman Harper is the guy?
No. And it's interesting because they haven't, you know, you look at it, Swearinger's interesting. Freeney's going to be back if they both want it. If not, then, you know, it's over, it's done with, whatever. And that's it. Like, the only thing that we've seen with Arians is, you know, he's got this affection for certain players. And so you wonder if Jerod is that player.
He might be, considering, you know what, Bruce Arians never said ever a single negative thing about Jerod Powers. There was nothing that was his fault ever.
Just the fans.
It was never Jerod Powers' fault for anything. Even when he was beat, it was always somebody else's assignment.
Yeah, that's why I don't see him. I don't necessarily see him going, but I mean, how can you pay him $6 million a year? Can you give him he's only 28. He's 28. Can you give him a 4-year, $25 million deal?
Jeez, no, I can't. Even if it's not my money, I can't. And I like Jerod Powers, and we talked about it all season because, you know, up until the point when Justin Bethel was playing significant snaps, everyone said, well, why isn't Justin Bethel? Just put him out there. He's better. And like, no, Jerod Powers is a better cornerback. That's why he's playing. Jerod Powers has been a starter for 7 years in this league. He's a good player. He's just not a great player. And, you know, they're trying to make it a little bit better. And he might be a little bit less good than he was this year, because he wasn't quite as good as he was in 2014 when he was playing exclusively in the slot.
Yep, and so I could see, and I'm having this conversation kind of now on Twitter as we go. I've seen a couple mock drafts with, you know, you ran one the other day with the Cardinals taking corners. And if they were to do that, you know, that means, are they moving on from Bethel, or is this corner going to be the third corner? But could they sign Powers and still draft a corner early? Like, and put Powers back in the slot?
They, you know, especially early, because who knows if Matthew's going to be able to play significantly early. And granted, it's just the ACL and not multiple ligaments, but they brought him along slowly last time. And I'm okay with that, because we want him back to the player that he was.
Yep, and just a quick note, Jess mentioned how woefully underpaid Rashad Johnson has been. And I know in terms of, you know, NFL players, like, it's all relative. But dude's been in the league 7 years and has a grand total of $8.4 million in salary. Or $8.7 million, sorry. So $8.7 million in salary. So, yeah, I mean, dude has never gotten paid. So if he goes and gets paid, I don't think anybody can be upset about that.
Nope. And he's a great guy and a solid player. So go make that money, Rashad. I just don't think we can do it here. On the offensive side of the ball, we've got a couple. I mean, we talked about Drew Stanton. We differ on that. Especially with this window, I like the idea of bringing Stanton back. You say just move on. Chris Johnson, another guy that I think we both agree is a guy that the Cardinals ideally should bring back, as long as he's not looking to get paid too much and as long as he's okay with a complimentary role. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
And, you know, especially we can't count on Andre Ellington. I think he's, you know, the novelty wore off and the injuries have sort of, he's turned into the player that Arians hates in terms of the trading table. And then on the offensive line, Bobby Massey, I don't think anyone, everyone knew he wasn't coming back, but is there a part of you that says, yeah, maybe we should bring him back? Is there any part of you that says that? Because none of that tells that. I don't feel that in the least.
Nah, I'm good with him going. I think you got to let the kid play in DJ Humphreys. And if he can't be better than Massey, who is a league average right tackle, which is a good thing, but, like, you can't pay him league average right tackle money, which is going to be, like, probably $5 to $7 million a year. So, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he got 5 years, you know, $30 million from a team. The Cardinals can't pay him that and then not play on top of that, not play DJ Humphrey.
Right, and it's twofold. Ted Larson, Bradley Sowell.
Yeah, exactly. Right, one of these guys is getting re-signed.
And I think, you know, it's interesting because the question came up about, I don't know how Josh Weinfuss was from ESPN was talking to Steve Keim about it, but asked about the long snapper situation. Mentioned Bradley Sowell and Josh Morrow as guys who took some snaps. And I wrote about it today on Wednesday, how Bradley Sowell becoming the long snapper would be the most Bradley Sowell thing to do to manage to stick around on this team longer. And I will tell you this. I love Brad Sowell as a guy. He's a great guy, a great teammate. And he was put in a really tough situation when he started at left tackle. But I am surprised. I mean, it shocked me that he was on this team this year. And so him being long snapper, and if he can make this career go, fantastic. Because go make that money, go do what you can to be in the NFL. But if he can manage to stick around for a few more years being the long snapper, that would be the most interesting thing in the world to me. It would make me laugh out loud.
Yeah, it would be super interesting. He's a big dude for a long snapper. I used to long snap, so I know what guys weigh and are built like. So just because I was always hopeful I would be able to make it in the NFL, but never came to fruition. So, Bradley Sowell to long snapper would be interesting because, like you said, it would be the most Bradley Sowell thing ever.
So, let's look at positions. I think for me, I think of the free agents. I think the Cardinals will sign a veteran corner. I don't think they are going to count on Bethel. I think they want Bethel to stand out. But they're going to bring in a veteran cornerback who has starting experience. I think they're going to bring in a veteran safety, whether that's bringing back Rashad Johnson. And then The guard position becomes very interesting. Do the Cardinals, I think by moving Cooper to center, I think it's a lock. The Cardinals will bring in a guard. And they're going to let Earl Watford sort of battle out for one of the two positions, right guard, right tackle, with DJ Humphreys, whoever this veteran guy is. And there's a couple of names out there that have come up as potential guys. But are there any other positions? I mean, I think if Chris Johnson doesn't get signed, I think they need to look at a veteran at that position and even tight end. But what hasn't been talked about is, you know, aside from, you know, pass rusher or the outside linebacker, no one's mentioned anything. I haven't heard anyone really talk about the inside linebacker position. Mentor's entering his final season. They don't really have any depth behind him with any sort of experience. They've got Alani Fua, they've got Gabe Martin, and they got Dan Buchanan. Dan Buchanan's not going anywhere. He's going to play linebacker this year. What are the positions that you see the Cardinals going at, and where would be their splash if they were going to do it?
I think their splash is going to be a surprise, because I think we all think it's going to come on, like, the defensive line, because that's what they talked about, or, you know, in maybe in the secondary, but I think it'll just be a surprise. Like, I don't think you can really guess, because Keim's done a good job of keeping everything
right, because Belvier came out of nowhere. Now, granted, that was part of the Razor's fault. Upati literally came out of nowhere. So, that happens again, and they, you know, and especially because they've downplayed the thought of getting a pass rusher in free agency. They've really downplayed that.
So looking at the corners, I think a couple fit the long athletic conversation. Sean Smith of Kansas City. He's going to get about $10 million a year to play corner. I think that would be kind of surprising, not because of the position or anything like that, but again, that's a lot of money invested in the secondary. You're going to have, you know, over 25 million or close to 25 million invested just in corners. Like, whew, that's a lot of money. And then Prince Amukamara, local guy, went to Nebraska, obviously. He's going to be the next tier down from Sean Smith. I think he'll end up with, you know, that probably that like 8 million a year, maybe 9 million a year range. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to sign a corner, you're going to have to pay these guys. The next, you know, if you want to talk about inside linebacker, right? And so linebacker's weird in the NFL. So, you know, if you want to look at free agents, don't go and look at inside linebackers.
You have to go out. Yeah, you got to look for specifically, you got to look for the 4-3 outside and then 3-4 inside and look at all of them.
Yeah, so look at linebackers, and then if you're like, oh, I know he rushes the passer, if you see a ton of sacks, probably step back and be like, all right, that's not the guy for me. Just looking at it, God, these names are terrible. Like, awful. You know, maybe I'm just like, honestly, I'm looking at it. Like I said before, I think Bruce Irvin's could be a guy that they are interested in, but it came out today that he's going to get like $9 million. So yeah, no thanks. If that's the case. And I like Bruce Irvin. Like, I'm good with Bruce Irvin. If you can get him for like $9 million and then he's going to 12 sacks, but I'm thinking of Bruce Irvin as playing like next to Dayon Buchanan for the next 4 or 5 years. I'm not paying $9 million for that. Just not happening.
No.
Shea McClellan is a guy we've talked about before. Very interesting. Hasn't lived up to the hype. Moved from outside to inside, but very athletic player. That's an interesting one. And then if you go outside, a name that keeps popping up that's interesting, and interesting is going to be the word of the day here, is Alden Smith. And I'm going to say this. I will never put it past the Cardinals to make that play, to take a chance on a guy. I will also never blame the Cardinals for not wanting to take that chance again after Darryl Washington. That goes for a guy like Alden Smith in free agency, and that goes for a guy like Noah Spence in the NFL draft. They've been burned. Like, as good as Tyrann Mathieu has been at overcoming his demons, they've been burned on the opposite end. So they might be gun shy. They may not. They may say, look, we've got a structure in place now, and, you know, Washington wasn't really on us, the Arians era, when all of that went down and happened. So, you know, when it started, I should say. So let's, you know, we can handle it. But, yeah, these guys are going to get paid. So Alden Smith's the one kind of pass rusher that's still young that I could see. Maybe they take on a chance on, like, a Tom Bahali. But dude's 33, 32. And he's old. And my buddies that are Chiefs fans said that he's going to be on a pitch count. And I don't really know if that's what the Cardinals are looking for as a player.
Unless a guy can come in and be the Dwight Freeney, but be willing to be paid Freeney.
Yeah. Yeah, and that, I don't think he is. So, you know, those are the names. And then guard, you know, and God, here we are again, right? Like, here we are again. Two first-round picks and signings later, and here we are again.
and there are two names at guard that were mentioned by a couple of guys early on before free agency came around. One, if you want to go a little older side, is at Detroit. And then the other guy, who is a younger one and probably more of a splash, and that would be... And it looks more possible now. You get the name. Come on, where is it? I don't want to.
Kelechi Osamele.
That's the one. Osamele, from Baltimore. Those are two names who Mike Jarecki brought right after the season was over.
He just drafted Osamele in the draft when I told him to 5 years or 4 years ago.
Now, Manuel Ramirez, that's a guy that's kind of interesting there because he's already old. He's 33. And so you can get him less long term. Although that, to me, the Ramirez connection was a better one when the plan was still to have him battle with, basically be the Jonathan Cooper insurance policy. And since Cooper's going to move, if that's true, that they're going to move him over to center, that's a different story. And you can still see a guy, an old guy like Manny Ramirez coming in. And then they draft a guard. I mean, we've seen Cody Whitehair come up in mock drafts already in the first round. That would be every bit the Steve Keim thing to do based on what we've seen the first few years. I don't know if it'll be a splash this time because they already have some talent there. But if they're moving Cooper, it could go that way because I'm thinking not necessarily a Ted Larson quality player, but the same type of guy. A guy who's a veteran, versatile on the line, and had a decent amount of starting experience.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. Another name is like Jari Evans, but he's old and not very good. Kind of working through this. Evan Mathis, Pro Football Focus still loves him. I don't know if the NFL does. Alex Boone, did you mention him?
I did not. That'd be an interesting name because
that's the one to watch for me. Because he's a right guard, right tackle. And you're saying, well, what the hell does that have to do with anything?
Flexibility. But you want flexibility on the line in case DJ doesn't work out.
Yeah, if you're going to give somebody $5 million, wouldn't it be better if you knew that they could be better than average at two positions where your current players you're just hoping are good at one, right? Like, so you're hoping DJ Humphries is good enough next year, but you know what Alex Boone is as a right tackle. So that's how I kind of look at it.
And that would be, and it would continue to be one of those things that, you know, the Cardinals have gone to the San Francisco well a couple of times. They got burned the first time when they brought in, well, goodness, what was his name? The name slips. The guy who came from San Francisco was terrible, then went back to San Francisco.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I can't remember his name.
Jeez. Well, then they go to Mike. Keim has always looked to San Francisco as the way they built their offensive line as kind of a model for them. Them and Dallas. Now, that name's going to bother me for a while, so, yeah.
I'll find it. I'm looking right. Adam Snyder.
That's it. That's why we wanted to forget about him. We tried so hard and he came back. So yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. A guy who wasn't really happy with how things were. You know, San Francisco was kind of a mess. You know, everyone that retired come back. Now that maybe there was something to the whole Jim Tom Sula thing that they didn't want to play for him.
Yeah, and another name that's interesting is J.R. Sweezy. He's not super good, but he's another flexible guy on the offensive line.
That's true.
A lot of like really good offensive linemen available, especially a guard. Caliche, as we talked about, Amina Silatulo, who is an All-Pro, I think, for Carolina, 27, young. Jeff Allen out of Kansas City, very good player. I'm going through all of there's a lot of good names on this. Like, all of a sudden, I'm super interested in what the Cardinals are doing, moving Jonathan Cooper to center, because now it makes more sense. Excuse me. Because you look at this guard market, and it's like gangbusters.
Yeah, you've got a lot of guards, and there'll be guys like a Sweezy who you won't necessarily have to pay a ton of money. Now, Sweezy, he'll get paid, but he's a guy that you could pay because he's been up and down. I mean, he's definitely not special, but he played on a line that's had a very, very good offense and a very good running game. And even though the metrics say they're bad, that was a very productive offense and they won a championship. So, yeah.
Yes, I mean, and those are the interesting names, right? Like, of guys that can do fun things, that can be a little flexible. Yeah, I mean, maybe they make another splash on the offensive line. Maybe they go after Silatulo or Osamele and, you know, continue to be young. And those guys are freaks of nature, like freaks, physically speaking. Talk about getting physical at the offensive line spot, like, just draft Derrick Henry then and run the ball 45 times a game. He and DJ and you know, you could have
then
a
your
fun.
Palmer print. There yeah. you go. Then you game.
You really are.
Yeah, interesting. You know, there's something I almost don't understand. The Cardinals, Bruce Arians made the comments that after the season, how some of the offensive linemen on the have a bright future ahead of them. Mike tweeted out today, I mean, which is interesting because he's been cut by five different teams. Physically, he looks the part. He's a really big 6'5", 330 pounds, big, big guy. But he's been cut by five different or six team. And I don't know how he made it on the practice squad. I kind of do. I sort of do. Through the contact that I had, he is Goodwin's guy. Goodwin loves McLean. He's one of those kind of Bradley Saul is BAs, McLean is goodies. But yeah, I can't imagine, you know, I don't look at those guys and think, oh, they're going to be starters. I think maybe they be turn into backups, maybe. But if we looked at the running back position, let's assume that Chris Johnson does resign. He gets paid somewhere a couple of years, you know, $3 million per, which he could get. I mean, it's very possible he could get that. You're going to want, you want someone reliable behind David Johnson. Who is that guy? You almost want to make it a guy who can catch the ball with, you know, because Bruce Arians has gone completely, you know, has gone from what he said, but in 2013 when, you know, running backs, they run and they pass block. We've got receivers to catch the ball. And you've got names out there, you know, guys who can be an impact in both the running game and the passing game. You've got a Joique Bell. You've got a Reggie Bush. He never stays healthy. guys like who you could do that, or you could go the older route with LeGarrette Blount and do with him what you did with Chris Johnson. Is there anyone among some of these veteran free agents that you'd say, yeah, he might addition as a backup?
Steven Ridley out of New York, former Patriot. He looked semi-healthy at the end of the season. Catch the ball, run the ball a little bit. I think he would be fine. I think he can get him, you know, for 2 years, $2.5 million type deal, and you'd be good to go for the next, you know, 2 years, and then you gotta, you know, see what you have in DJ and then make a decision from there. But I think somebody like Steven Ridley would probably be my favorite of the group that I'm looking at right now. I mean, you're not James Starks fumbles the ball too much. I don't think you're going to be in play for Forte. Joik Bell's an interesting one, but he's always hurt. Always, right? Like,
and we've already got one of those guys in Andre Johnson.
Yeah, you can.
Well, Reggie, you said the thing about Reggie Bush too. I mean, talent's there, skill set's there, and he would make an interesting, you know, in terms of a guy in the locker room. You guy like Reggie Bush there, but could you count on him? No.
And you don't want that. Maybe like a super wild card. God, these names are off. Talk about a difference between like a super wild card would be like a Fred Jackson, maybe.
But like, he wasn't any good when he was at last year.
Yeah, but I mean, he's at least a body that knows what they're supposed to do. Kyrie
that is
Robin,
true.
Another one.
To look at is a tight end. Jermaine Gresham was a possibility, but they still have a lot of youth there. And between Darren Fells now, Troy Nicholas, they bring back, you know, Ifeanyi Moma off of injured reserve if he's recovered. Joe Christian if he's recovered. I don't know if you want to have a end room that does that, where the most experienced guy on that roster is Darren Fells. Yeah, he's old in terms of playing experience. But I think Jermaine Gresham was a really good addition, and if he comes back, that's one thing. But he probably wants to go somewhere where he can catch the football. Who are guys that are able blockers who are okay with not catching a ton of passes? You've mentioned Dwayne Allen. But is he going to be happy in a system where the tight end is basically an offensive lineman who's eligible to catch passes every once in a while?
I don't know. Red Ellison's another name out of Minnesota. Michael Humanawamani out of New Orleans used to play for where did he play? New England. He's another interesting guy. That's really it. I mean, I'm looking at these names, and James Hanna is an interesting one out of Dallas. Like I said, there's some interesting names. There's not a ton of good names, and the ones that are good are not going to be interested in Arizona, I would guess.
Anybody else? I mean, the Cardinals, as talented as they are, they don't have a huge amount of hole. I mean, oh, wait, we didn't even talk about the pass rushers. Are the Cardinals going to go after any pass rusher at all? I mean, we saw, I mean, the rumors had it a year ago that they were going after all of them. Brian Arakpo is in the mix. Pernell McPhee. And now this offseason, Steve Keim's saying they're too expensive to get, yet that's what they were doing just a year ago. They even went after Brooks Reed, allegedly. Reportedly, they went after, you know, Brooks Reed, Brian Arakpo, Pernell McPhee, and kind of struck out on all of them. Might that be their splash, despite what they said that would happen? Or, in all fairness, it's not like the Cardinals have gone about ignoring the pass rush. They've added players every year, but because of where they're drafting, it's really hard to get an impact guy, and they haven't had anyone emerge other than Alex Okafor briefly in 2014. You know, they added Okafor, they added Kareem Martin, they added Shaq Riddick, they added Lamar Woodley, they added Dwight Freeney, they added John Abraham, you know, then they add Marcus Golden. They really like Golden. That from all impressions, they really like Golden. And so it's going to be a matter of, can they find someone on that other side? there's some names out there. There's Mario Williams, but what can we get? What can the Cardinals get in realistically in a pass rusher?
I mentioned Alden Smith. You know, that's kind of the
crazy one. That's the crazy one out there.
Yeah. Nick Perry is an interesting one out of Green Bay. Young, injured a lot, never fully developed. Oh, goodness. God, these names are awful.
I know Robert Ayers has come up as a Pro Football Focus guy that's a target. Jason Pierre-Paul on his one good hand. This is why children, we do not hold fireworks to set them off.
That's right. Don't hold fireworks. I mentioned Tomba and his age and that he's kind of on a pitch count. Mario Williams is the name, but man, he was awful, right? Like, awful.
Yeah.
As an outside linebacker in 2011.
He did have production. Five sacks in five games before he got hurt, but it didn't look good early. He came in bunches and it looked like he was starting to get it, but yeah, there's some.
And I think he's still going to get paid.
Yeah.
I do. Pierre Paul's an interesting one because I don't know if anybody trusts him. I don't think the Cardinals are going to be interested in Greg Hardy. No. So I don't think we have to worry about that guy. I mean, really, like, it's slim pickings because these guys don't have free agency. No,
you know, and there's a guy that, you know, a guy that came up in pass rusher in the draft, Adrian Claiborne. He hasn't done anything in the league. And he's...
Yeah, and I think he's a little bigger and too stiff to do what... I mean, I don't know. Like, they're going to have to spend some money if they want to, you know, and take a... And maybe... That's what I'm saying. Maybe Alden Smith is the guy to take a risk on, to take a flyer on, to pay on, and to hope that he keeps his nose clean for 2 to 3 years and, you know, you can cash in on that time. But I mean, this... It's... You know, you mentioned Robert Ayers. He's 30. I mean, like, he's probably going to get $5 million, if not more, a year. Like, how much can you pay a 30-year-old and for how long?
And Alden Smith, he's, you know, will he even play in 2016?
Well, that's the other part,
right?
It says
he was suspended for a year, and that was in November. I mean, would that even be worth it? I
mean, yeah. It's going to be interesting. That's what I'm saying. It's going to be, like, really interesting to see what they do at that position because that's, you know, that's kind of the obvious one that they improve if they want to get over the hump.
And so, you know, maybe I almost say, you know, can Kareem Martin step and be anything in the pass rush? Does Shaq Riddick show anything? I think Dwight Freeney, they need back if he wants to be back because they need that specialized guy. You could even go with a guy like Chris Long, maybe, if he could, but only if he's willing to do Dwight Freeney role, play that reduced role, would be an interesting addition there. But, you know, it's almost like this year is a mystery for the Cardinals. Like, we have some ideas, but because low tendering Jefferson, moving Coop Center, everything's in play.
And everything's going to be expensive if they want to, you know, truly upgrade, right? Like,
right.
It's going to be expensive to get a pass rusher. It's going to be expensive to get a good guard. We already saw that once. It's going to be
quarters and safeties are expensive, even if the safeties aren't that good.
Yeah. So I mean, you could theoretically, you know, do a, you know, Osamele and Sean Smith stack for, you know, $18 million because they're going to end up having about $25 million when it's all said and done. If they really want to, they're going to get about $25 million, and then, you know, you have about $7 million to play with to fill out the rest of your roster. So it's going to be fun to watch. Like, it's definitely going to be fun to watch because of what they have done today to really set all these things in motion.
Well, I think we've kind of run out of stuff to talk about because, you know, guess what? We've talked about everything. That'll make it a wrap for our free agent preview. Yes, we've gone over with, wow, this is a long show. This is the longest show that we've had in a long time. So hopefully you listen through the whole thing and we're just not talking to nobody listening. So make sure you listen to the show. Head over to RevengeOfTheBirds.com. You can find the show on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Blog Talk Radio. Or you can make sure you catch it on RevengeOfTheBirds.com. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. And that we will have a week hiatus because there's nothing to talk about starting next Tuesday other than a few rumors. But let's go ahead and we'll come back in 2 weeks unless I can line up another guest somewhere along the line. Seth and I will be back in 2 weeks to talk about the Cardinals' first moves in free agency. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rue. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. Thank you for listening.
Have a good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.